Hello again, and welcome to another fun-filled episode of Monday Night Magic. Yay, magic.
Way.
We have a lot of nonsense going on this week, but first, I'm Chewy. Hi.
Hi,
I'm joined this week by the Squeebill, the Bill Squee.
Hi, Chewy.
It's that guy, the one who's always here.
That is pretty accurate.
Well, I mean, he recurs every upkeep.
Exactly.
Whether he likes it or not.
That other voice you're hearing is not Clues, because Clues is stranded in the wilds of West Virginia without, internet. Presumably he has power, because he has radio telescopes, and those need power.
One would hope.
Yeah, so he's...
So he's willingly stuck in West Virginia's wild wilderness?
Yeah, because wild wilderness, yes, and the redundancy is in fact redundant. he's doing some sort of radio astronomy camp for undergrad people, and the only internet is wired internet, because it's a radio astronomy place, it's radio free. So there's no wireless internet, and there's no cell reception, there's no nothing.
So what you're saying is that West Virginia ate the radio waves, and he could never escape.
No, I didn't actually say that at all.
Oh, good, because that would be terrible.
Now, the area he's in eats radio waves, but he can escape.
Oh, good, okay.
Eventually. But because Clues is not here, we brought on one of our other people that we know who wear the black shirt, Trevor.
See how hard he worked to not call you his friend? That was really impressive.
Yeah, that was. I feel touched.
He is my friend, but I didn't want people to think, well, we just brought him on because he's a buddy of mine.
I mean, don't you have an entire
he's
show
also
that
qualified
is based on that
for
premise?
This? So I guess there's that.
Okay, one at a time. What?
Don't you have a whole show based on that premise?
Yeah, but it's not this one, so...
Yeah. No. So, hi, Trevor.
Hi.
Welcome to the internet yet again.
Yeah, I know. It's weird to be talking to people and not just to my microphone.
It's true. So Trevor is also the guy who does the Weekend Calendar podcast and the community... What is it called?
It is the Community Calendar.
Right. The Community Calendar is a Facebook group or is it a website?
Yes.
Yes, both of these things or just the one?
Both of these things.
Okay.
There's a Facebook page and there's a blog where I update the events at the beginning of the week.
Gotcha.
And then I record them at the end of the week so that way you have something to listen to on Friday to know what you're doing.
Right. And forgive my ignorance, but the link to this is in the show notes of every episode of Monday Night Magic, so you have no excuse for not knowing what it is. I do, because I put it there once and I don't go to events. So, you know.
In any events you do go to, I'm usually like, hey, Chewy, are you coming to this?
Exactly. Or I have a million other people. You going to this? Like, Bill, when are we going to Charlotte?
I don't know, whenever Charlotte happens.
Yeah. So let's start with the big news, of course, because the tournaments are the same every week, but it was posted today, actually, yeah. Changes starting with Pro Tour Magic Origins. So starting with Pro Tour Magic Origins, which is, when is that? She didn't mention in the article when that actually is. But upcoming, which the Pro Tour will happen some short number of weeks after Origins releases, right?
It's usually 2 weeks later.
It's the third week of July, it's the first weekend of August.
There you go.
Okay.
It's the 31st of July and the 1st and the 2nd.
Okay. So then, that's when Pro Tour Magic Origins happens. These rules changes will take effect. The first of which, and the only one that I'm actually happy with, is the Mulligan rule update. Hey, Bill, you want to tell us about that?
Sure. So let's start by recapping how Mulligans work right now. So basically, you look at your opening hand. Well, first of all, you roll a die or some other random way of determining who gets first choice, and then, you know, pick player draw, whatever. After you've decided all that, then you draw your opening hand, which is 7 in nearly every format, and you, as the first player, look at it and decide whether or not you're keeping. Then the other person makes the same choice, and you will repeat this over and over again until both people keep. But every time you do it, you also have to discard a card and draw back to 6. So that's all normal. None of that is changing. The difference now, however, is after you've done this with all of your mulligans, if you have less cards in your hand than the established opener, which is usually 7, then you may scry 1, which would mean look at the top card of the library and decide whether or not it stays there or goes on the bottom. And that's new. this only applies essentially if you've mulliganed, because if you've done anything else, like say you have a ley line, that gets factored in after you've decided to keep your hand and do this part. So you don't have to think that you're going to get some ability to ley line your way into a free scry. It's pretty much just when you mulligan.
Yeah, once you've decided that you're going to play this hand, then you get the scry. A point, this is being piloted at the Pro Tour. It's not going to go into effect immediately after until they're sure they want to do it.
So, yeah, the actual impact on the game for you is, in the event that you have to mulligan, you obviously have the disadvantage of having one less card, but it's not quite the full disadvantage, because the big fear is usually you mulligan down to a less than ideal hand and you're stuck keeping it, and then if you don't get the land that you need or you get nothing but land, then you're pretty much out of the game. And so this is a way to slightly mitigate that.
Yeah.
And of course, because it's the internet, people are overreacting to this rules change.
Well, of course.
The biggest outcry is people are like, so Delver players are going to automatically mull to six and then scry one to set up their Delver on the play. And it's like, I guess that you can deliberately lose a card and then play a Delver off of a non-fetched source. Because if you fetch, then, you know, the card that you left on top is no longer there when you cast the Delver.
Yeah, I actually had a listener, now that I'm unmuted, because I was trying to figure out why Bill was being such a jerk and talking over me.
I mean, I do that.
It's because I wasn't being heard. But I had a listener send me a message earlier and said, let's see here. Hang on. He said, I don't know how I feel about it. Like, what's better, a full grip or setting up your draw? I said, I mean, a good opener is still good, so you keep it, and a bad opener, you're still going to toss back. He said, true, but six isn't too bad with top deck knowledge and with all the hand disruption in all formats. I got to thinking about it, and I was like, so you're going to give up a card in hand, which is card at disadvantage. Like, it doesn't matter if you know what the next one is or not. Having one less card to play with is disadvantage. In case your opponent thought seizes you, huh?
There's also just the basic fact that going down one card, even if you get to set up your draw in exactly that Delver scenario, doesn't mean you're going to go from seven great cards to six great cards. You might get something awful and then have to go to five and a scry and then four and a scry. Like, you're not going to be mulliganing more just to take advantage of this outside of very niche circumstances, in which case your options aren't great. So
exactly.
I wouldn't worry too much about it.
It's also notable that you don't get the scry until you've actually kept. So if you you go to six, you don't get to scry and then decide. Like, you're on six. So if you deliberately go to six to get the scry and then your six cards are lands, well, then you really kind of shot yourself in the foot on it. Cause now you're going to go to five and look at a card.
It's true. So I don't think it's going to be a strategic thing. At least I hope not. Cause that's not what it's meant for. It's meant to keep a mulligan from completely ruining coverage is essentially what it's meant for. I think what might have pushed this over the edge was the finals of the GP in Charlotte that we talked about, where he got the game loss game one and then mulliganed and was completely out of the game for game two and lost. And that was the finals. And I'm sure this, well, Bill was saying earlier, I really want to think that this has been in the works for longer than that. And it might have been. Maybe.
I mean, I am hoping.
I mean, they've also been trying to figure out a way to fix mulligans for limited, because if you go to six in a limited game, that's a huge disadvantage, because, you know, your curve for limited goes from two to six instead of, you know, a constructed curve, which is either a tightly controlled one to four or ramp and seven to eight. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
You have to hit the right number of lands and spells in a limited game to even maybe be in the game.
And color screw is a bigger problem in limited than it is in constructed. Just, you can control for your variants in constructed a lot easier than you can for limited. So,
true.
If you end up with the bad colors in your sealed pool, then there are just going to be some games you can't win, or at least the odds of you winning are so much lower that it's a problem. And you realistically can't just go monocolor to get around that problem in limited most of the time, so. I don't know. I'm in favor of seeing how it goes. My only real gripe on it is just that it's strange for me whenever gameplay is different at, you know, a pro level event versus a normal one, when, like, the reasoning is they're doing it at the pro level because they want to make sure that, you know, they want to see what happens. And I can't think of many pros who would have a problem with producing the variance in their game. So it feels like a weird test kitchen to me, but obviously they're going to do it. I'm sure it'll be fine. And If I get even one format where I don't have to deal with, oops, I mulliganed, now I'm dead to werewolves, I'll be happy. So, because that was the story of Innistrad.
I think that if this turns out to be something they want to do, I think this will be a blanket change. Surely there wouldn't be a difference in like pro level events and competitive level events and not competitive REL, you know. Surely they wouldn't do that like they have in this other thing we're going to talk about in a minute, which really pisses me off.
It's being piloted at Pro Tour Origins. This is the only time they're doing this as of right now.
Until they make a decision, which surely, as Bill said, surely they'll go with it because who at the Pro Tour doesn't want this?
I mean, to credit, if the fear is that it will somehow be exploited in these crazy Delver scenarios, having a room full of the best players in the world with this rule to play with is probably the best test flight they're going to get.
It's a surefire way to catch any of that.
Like, if there is anything that can be taken advantage of, they will find it. But I personally can't foresee any reason why people would willingly pursue that over just having more cards.
What's the format for Origins? It's limited and...
It's a Pro Tour, so I presume it's jumping
standard.
Around a bit.
It's 3 rounds of Magic Origins Booster Draft, 5 rounds of Standard.
Okay. Oh, right, because they made that change a while back, and then they had to backpedal because people are stupid. I mean, because people complained. Right.
Well, after, I think, the first modern Pro Tour of the new cycle sort of upset a lot of people with certain bans that happened.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Nah.
And I don't know if they want to have more Amulet Bloom on the Pro Tour scene just yet, because the deck still kind of wavers between I absolutely always win on turn 3 and I do nothing for 15 turns and die. Neither.
That sounds about like combo.
Yeah.
Yeah, but neither of those situations are very interesting to watch on coverage. At least if Twin has to slug it out, it's still an interesting game to watch.
See, and the fact that not a very interesting game to watch on coverage might be a factor bothers me. But that brings me to the next point, or the next 2 points, actually. So, I really don't believe this. I really don't. But the head judge for Pro Tours, the World Championship, and the World Magic Cup, the 3 highest levels of play, the head judge can now review video of matches to aid in an investigation of any rules violations that may have occurred during the match.
Know that it can, not must.
Yeah, but...
it's going to be a thing.
But we'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah.
What bothers me about this is that, okay, one of the things that bothers me personally about this is that the ability to do this means there is now that fundamental difference that we talked about when the Chapin thing happened in the first place, a fundamental difference between matches on camera and matches off camera. Sure, it's just at the highest levels of play where they're playing for the most things, but what I don't see why that should be a factor. I'm glad it's not at every GP because that would be terrible. But, and also as Patrick Chapin showed, the people that play at the highest level have the most knowledge of what's going on are the ones who are going to be able to cause delays and problems by going, well, I think you should review this and throwing 1,000 reasons why. And I don't like this.
To add to that, they're also going to have judges watching on camera matches on footage and are able to stop matches.
Yeah, well, I think having... So something that's always tripped me out is there's a table judge at most of these coverages anyway, but apparently their job is not to watch for mistakes. Their job is to fix it when someone calls judge. There's just one sitting there.
At Star City events now, the judge sitting at the table is not even a judge. It's a person who's on staff. And their whole point is to hand out tokens and relay life totals. They are not a table judge. He's not allowed to make rulings.
Right. Well, that's because he's not there in the judge capacity, but there are table judges at not Star City events. This is why I wish Clues was here. No offense, Trevor, but I think he's done a lot more of the coverage side of things than you might have.
Yeah. I don't think I've actually got to sit at a top 8 that, you know, matters. Like I've been at PTQ top 8s, but that's mostly just making sure people don't play too slowly.
Right. But I know that at events there is a table judge, but I'm pretty sure Clues has said in the past they're not there to watch the match and stop when they see a problem, they're there so that there's a judge handy when they need a judge because they're on coverage and they don't want the person on video to call judge and have to sit back and wait for one to show up. How does that sound, Bill? Does that sound accurate?
I mean, it sounds just as reasonable as I'm just here to make sure that the life totals are correct for coverage.
Bill, are you there?
I am now.
Oh, okay.
I did that mute thing because you did it and it sounded really cool.
Oh, okay.
So, but yeah, like I don't have any direct experience with that as a non-judge, but I do know that the idea of having a judge just sitting there and waiting to hand out penalties for small mistakes would change the way the game is played. So you can't reasonably expect the judge sitting there to just be watching it 1,000% like a hawk to make sure that Magic Online is happening in front of you. That just isn't reasonable. And so, however, when these people are on coverage and they have, you know, 1,000 angry nerds watching the Twitch chat or something else like that, then these mistakes become minor scandals that are a big, big deal for 2 hours and then forgotten. And during those 2 hours, now they want the ability to, you know, say, well, you know, everyone else saw it. Why didn't you? And this is obviously a case where they put together, this is a tool. We're going to give the judge the option of using it, but it bugs me because if the judge opts not to use it, there's going to be a lot of backlash, and that feels very unfair. Like, I don't like the idea of them stopping a tournament and mandating, well, now we're going to go do a review, because I've seen people appeal things that they know full well they did wrong, just in the off chance that it gets them an out, and I foresee this being the kind of thing that happens more often among the people that would take advantage of it. Because, I mean, you have to stop, and then he has to go and review it, and it's like that dumb thing in football that takes forever, and I don't foresee any penalty for asking the judge to go review a video every time you think something went wrong. I mean, they might eventually make one, but...
Yeah. Well, the thing about football is it only affects these two teams playing against each other. It doesn't affect the other thousands of people.
Every other football game in the country, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like when Belichick throws a challenge flag when he's playing against the, let's say, the Colts. It's not like the Giants and Steelers have to stop what they're doing. Yeah.
Right. And you also don't get, you know, punished one of your extra turns if it turns out that it's upheld.
Yeah.
In college football. So.
And what, but again, you can say, well, it's only at Pro Tours and, you know, the champs, the championship matches, the WMC and the World Championship. And yeah, but those are the people more likely to try to exploit it because gamers gonna game, as we've said when this whole, Chapin, failure to do the Johnny thing or whatever happened in the first place.
Oh, go ahead.
Alright, so it takes a great amount of, to back up a game, to do a rewind is a above and beyond extenuating circumstance. This would be even beyond a rewind, I feel like, in terms of wanting to use that tool. Like, because now you're looking at two players' hands and the entire history of the match, and like, I feel like it would have to be a much more extenuating circumstance than just, I think my opponent missed, put two lands into play this turn.
Yeah, and it's not like the player can go, oh, I call for video review, because that's not how it works. But I'm afraid that a player going, I call for video review, and the judge going, well, no, we don't need that. Now all of the nerds watching, there's another backlash. There's more drama because of this. And I feel that's bad for the game on the whole. I know they're trying to, like, change with the times and incorporate coverage, but I think the game needs to be the standard and coverage needs to work around it, not the other way around.
Had I known I was going to be on, I would have asked some L3s to see if there was something that is being drafted for the IPG as part of a, these are the times and places where you can do a video review, and this is the philosophy behind doing a video review. But
kind of like there is,
like,
for rewinds.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that if it's in the IPG and it's a codified, you know, these are the exact situations that we can do this in, and these are the philosophies behind why it's these situations and none others, then it doesn't become a tool that everyone can just be like, things.
Yeah. Well, based on watching, you know, the incident that you were just referring to, that Chewy, that's pretty much started this discussion lately, they're going to ask. Like, they're just going to say, well, can you check the video? And we as a community need to be comfortable with the idea that the judge will just say no and that that's the end of it.
Exactly.
Because, like, when you're watching baseball, the umpire doesn't go watch a video. He calls it, and then you move on with the game because it's the only way the game's going to end. And we just need to be ready for that. I'm hoping that this is something that really is just a tool and not an expectation, and we just have to set that as the standard.
I really hope so. So, nerds, if you are watching coverage and your favorite player has a ruling against him and they don't go to the video review, please do not storm the internet calling for the judge's head, all right? That is not helpful for anybody. Okay? I said this about Chapin fanboys freaking out because, well, he shouldn't have gotten that penalty. Yes, he should have, and he did. Shut up about it. Anyway, I also really don't fanboy over Magic players, so I can say that.
So do you want to talk about the last thing?
Yeah, I also hate this, but I understand it. I still hate it, though. So the final thing is something that affects very few players, I think, because very few players end up on coverage anyway, and of those, even way, way fewer care about this, but from now on, if you're on camera at a Pro Tour, a Grand Prix, the World Magic Cup, or the World Championship, you have to have your lands in the back, creatures in the front, your library on one side or the other, the graveyard next to the library, and the exile zone nearby and distinct, which it sounds like you say, well, yeah, but there are some players, and the one that's quoted most notably is Adrian Sullivan, who plays lands in front, that are going to have to alter the way they play the game. And I know we pick on the lands in front people a lot because it's weird. But just because it's weird, I don't think that means that they should regulate it.
Yeah, this one's kind of interesting because I don't know, like, I don't know, maybe Trevor can tell us. Like, what would the actual violation be if you didn't do this?
It would be USC minor failure to follow tournament procedure.
Like, because I'm just looking at it, and I'm like, oh, so, like, is there an ability to say, well, I'm playing a deck that doesn't use creatures. Can I make use of the front half of the board in front of me?
I mean, if there's nothing in front, there's nothing in front. Like, yeah. If all you have on the table is lands, there's not really a front or back.
Uh-huh. I don't know. I think this is just one of those ones where they're doing it because they're trying to make coverage a little bit easier for people to follow, but in practice, it's fun to joke about lands in front, lands in back. It's never actually mattered. The biggest thing that it doesn't specify that I kind of wish would be specified is a reminder that you don't get to stack your lands, because that is a bigger problem that I run into at all levels of play. Even though you're not supposed to do that, they just people do.
Where someone just has a stack of 12 lands and then they pull lands out, tap them, and put spells into play.
Yeah, or they do that tap that's only like 30 degrees, so you have trouble telling from across the table what's tapped. Like, all of that stuff is more annoying to me than where you put your lands.
Because if I believe,
ask you what the card says, you have to let me read it, so.
Yeah. I believe all of those things are implicitly part of what's going on. Like, I remember there being a specific call out to must tap 90 degrees.
And the one that they have here, it says all untapped cards must face the controller of that card, so you can't have like an upside down card, and that sort of goes back to old Kamigawa flips as well. But I don't think anything actually specifies the degree of tilting, but this is also just an article. Like, we'll see the actual rules when those come out later too.
Yeah.
So
it's just, I don't like that they're trying to alter the way someone plays the game because of coverage. This is, again, coverage of the game interfering with the game itself. And yes, I know it affects a very small number of people, but it's the principle of the thing where I believe the game itself should be the focus and the coverage should work with that. But this is now fundamentally changing the way, like, personally, I know three people. It's the guy that plays at my local shop whose name, I don't even know his name, and he'll probably never be on camera to GP. It doesn't matter. It's that guy and Adrian Sullivan and Chris Lansdale. Oh, and Paulo. Doesn't Paulo do lands in front, too?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, there. Boom.
Technically, LSV moves his lands around, round, around just to screw with people. So I guess he can't do that either because he's almost always going to be on the camera.
But you see, that is also annoying. And I can understand telling him, stop that for that. But that's not
– right.
That's different.
The philosophy behind this mandate is so that way when you tune into coverage, you can at a glance understand what's going on with the board state. It gets particularly hard to know what's going on when one player has all of his lands up against the red zone, and then like two creatures just kind of off near the edge of the table, and the other player has three or four creatures right up against that player's lands, and then like a pile of lands to the left.
Yeah, but that onus should be on the person watching to watch and figure out what's going on, or to have enough knowledge of the game or format to be able to figure it out. It shouldn't be on the player to alter the way they play so that some guy that just started watching can feel comfortable watching coverage. You screw that guy. We're playing games here.
That guy is the person who might get into the game and bring more to it in the long run. This person who's doing it is not going to stop playing over this. So that's going to be the decision they make.
But what bothers me about that line of reasoning is that now we're catering to the bottom 1% in case that person wants to give Wizards money. I understand the whole point of the Pro Tour. It's not the professional tour now. It's the promotional tour. I understand. But if that's all it takes to make that person, well, I don't even want to play this game, then he's not going to play anyway. Like, acquisition of the new moron who wants to learn how to play but can't be arsed to figure out who's attacking what. Like, what the hell?
I mean, think of it this way. If we didn't recenter the football teams on the field every time, suddenly you're playing to the left or right of the field a bit more than necessary. Like, I mean, I guess that's...
What?
Oh, never mind. It's an apples and oranges. I was thinking about it and it sounded really good in my head.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, you center the football teams on the field so that way, regardless of where the camera is, it looks good on coverage, but...
But they still line up on where the ball is.
Right.
Like, I've actually... You see in the field goal to win the game, you see the guy, like, get the ball snapped to him and then, like, run to the side just to give the kicker a better angle. So it's not like they place the ball in the center of the field every down.
This is true.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, you're right. It sounded good in your head.
Well, in the case of this one, it's just a matter of this is something that doesn't change the output of the game. It does streamline something that it wasn't really actively hurting. Although, if it does force people who activate their main lands to move them in with their creatures, I kind of appreciate that. Like, I actually want to know what's a Dryad Arbor and what's a forest. Because that one stupid promo is still a problem, like, 5 years later. But overall, this is a level of complexity I'm willing to sacrifice, insofar as it's not affecting the game at all. And if it, you know, gets more people an easier time telling what's going on, then I'm in favor of it.
And I mean, it's not like you have to stop playing the way you play when you're not on camera. Like, in fact, it becomes a point of pride at that point that you're at the top tables, but you're not on camera, but you're lands in front. Like, I actually see this becoming something of a movement as the mandate continues.
Well, the obvious goal is that they want to actually establish that as the default now, and this is how people will see it. And new players will probably be more likely to do this. They can't make it a rule, they could, but they're not going to at all levels. And so This is just a way to establish it as what you expect, and then you can play however you want to on your own, just like you always could.
Well, but if you do that, it even says we strongly encourage players to use this layout when playing their matches in an off-camera area, because so that way it's not jarring when you have to change the way you play on camera. It seems like, okay, I know that it does no damage really, but it's the principle behind it of altering the game to accommodate coverage instead of the other way around that bothers me. And I hate to use the political term slippery slope, but this is two fundamental differences here between coverage matches and not that we've seen today.
Well, I think the reason that it doesn't bother me that there is that small difference is because I'm familiar with what happens when coverage is applied to pretty much anything else. Like, there are different timeouts going on in sports when they're on television than there are normally. It's just, it does change the game. And that's one of the things that other things have had to compromise on, because it's practical and it is a way that people will be exposed to it. I mean, if you're good enough to get in a feature match, you can obviously handle a small difference. I mean, it's not that different from learning how to do so many of the other things that we've learned how to do in a higher level tournament that are different from the lower level ones. I mean, that's just how it goes. Like, you don't typically have all the luxuries of a go-to judge right there. And when you're in a feature match, also, you have a slightly different clock than everyone else. I mean, the overall minutes are the same, but you're starting a little bit later. There are already differences. It's not that big of a jump. And as long as you set it up incorrectly is set at such a level that, you know, you're allowed to make that mistake once in a while and it doesn't actually punish you, I'm not going to mind it. They just have to put a rule out somewhere or it's just not going to change. But either way, in the grand scheme of changes, the only ones here that actually impact the game as far as any of us will be concerned is potentially the ability in the future of us having different mulligan rules. The rest of it is going to cater to people who are used to playing a different game than we do anyway.
True. It's my idealistic nature. I'm the weirdest idealist pessimist I've ever met. Like, everybody sucks, but it's fine because everyone's supposed to suck, you know? And in a perfect world, we wouldn't all suck. And damn it, it sucks that everyone sucks. That's the way my brain works. But, I just don't like making accommodations because we want more people to be able to watch on Twitch. Like,
all right. So when you're playing in an eternal format, like Legacy, you have to keep your graveyard in order. But they don't enforce that in Standard because no cards care about your graveyard order in Standard.
Yeah, but that's a rule of the game that's there. You keep bringing up points that make no sense. That's because there are cards in those formats that care about it. So
I think
have
his
to
point, though, was that regardless of the reasoning why, it is a difference between formats, and you just learn it when you play them. And in the case, like, if you and your group are playing, you know, just whatever cards, yeah, those cards exist, but if no one in your group's going to use them, then the graveyard order doesn't matter. But if you then take the same deck that you've been playing with your friends to a tournament where that's suddenly a rule, you have to just accept that that's part of it and adjust slightly how you play. The reasoning for it is irrelevant. Like, that's just what people have to do now, and this is just another thing that they have to do. I am interested in seeing what they do with this regarding, like, other sources of mana. Like, are we going to have to stick our mana rocks down there? Are they going to stay out in the front? Like, this is all going to be stuff that they'll have to explain in greater rules because there are gray areas. If it strictly lands, but then you animate a land, does it stay in the back? Does it move to the front? We don't know.
And it's entirely possible they're just piloting it for this Pro Tour because it's standard and most of those things don't apply.
I hope to God that they're not going to, like, draw out a diagram that everyone has to follow. Well, if you animate this land, you must move it here. And if this is, I don't think they're going to go that, like, deep into it. I think as long as it's clear to your opponent, I think it'll be fine, which is how it should be.
And that's probably what it will be in practice, but they can't do that without something. Like, there's a lot of communication that we would normally just assume that someone else understands, but in practice, a lot of Magic players are very bad at communication, especially when they're playing against people that don't speak the same language. So everything they can to minimize those things is a reasonable goal.
Yeah, that's another point to make, is that this isn't just a ruling for an event with a bunch of people who speak the same language. Like, I've seen some pretty awkward on-camera interactions between two players who speak completely different languages who are like, this card, I don't know where, like, what's going on.
Well, that's the fault of the two players for not freaking communicating, as Bill said. I don't know where this language thing came into this conversation because it's completely irrelevant to what we're talking about, but...
Well, I don't think it is.
Okay.
I really think that it's something where it can be difficult to understand a board state in pretty much all of Magic. Like, the more complex it gets, you have that. If you add on the challenge of someone doesn't speak your language, then communication's even more important. And if they can look down and tell... In some way, like, you're doing this thing that I'm doing so they can only focus on the differences. It's a very small, but it is a real advantage to streamlining something. People who learn to play Magic in different parts of the world will play things differently, and this is just something that can pull together a standard on it. I mean, I don't think it's ultimately going to affect much of anything in the grand scheme of things, or I'd be more invested in it, but I can see the reasoning behind it.
What
I want to see is the first time they have Dredge on camera at a Legacy GP, and someone goes to put their graveyard across the battlefield like 3 times. Because that's how Dredge operates. Dredge is just like, I take these things out and put them on the table.
Okay.
Well, because the recommendation is to have your graveyard next to your library in a neat pile. And that's completely counterintuitive to how Dredge in both Manaless and Mana variants play the game.
Yeah, I mean, I know that I got in the habit of placing my graveyard down so that I could see the top of every card from back when they had little tombstones if they still did stuff. And that's something that technically, if I'm on coverage, I have to make it a stack. So, little things to note. But
it doesn't say anything about a stack.
You're correct.
The graveyard must be adjacent to the library.
Yeah. You're right. Well, ha.
Yeah. So
take that, other people.
So Trevor's making stuff up. Look at you.
Well, I mean, when you say adjacent, do you mean the entire graveyard or like the bottom of the graveyard?
Oh my God! Now who's rules lawyering? Let's move on.
It would still be adjacent regardless. It's your graveyard.
Before I reach through the internet and smack, tell Renee to smack you. Okay, so let's go to tournaments.
All right.
For what it's worth, while we're here. Let's see here. GP Singapore happened.
Yes.
With 1,108 players. And it was modern.
It was indeed.
And I heard a rumor that the deck lists are in order.
It is true, sir.
That's unreal.
It's because Clues isn't here.
That's what it is, yeah. So, Masaki Hitomi won with Decepticons.
Yep.
Because there's still nothing in this deck that has Affinity.
Why would there be? That'd be silly.
Steven Tan is in second with more different Decepticons. This one actually does have Thoughtcast, so I still don't think you should call it Affinity though. Kita Kawasaki is running Jund in third place.
Yep.
This one has Olivia, which is the only difference my brain can spot in these various Jund decks for some reason.
They've consolidated remarkably well. Just in terms of like these are the definitive best cards for this deck, and then the small differences are just for metagame choices.
Yeah.
Because if you look at it though, it is like a list of the all stars of those colors. So look, Tasker's there.
Look at him.
And he's next to Tarmogoyf. You're running six Tarmogoyfs. Isn't that great?
And he's got fruit.
So hungry.
Reduke?
Yeah, I know, right?
It's Reduke doing all the way out in Singapore. Reduke.
Coming in fourth, apparently.
Yeah, apparently so. Came in fourth with Jund. I guess he really wanted to play modern over standard.
Probably.
Yay, moving on.
Got some Pyromaster Chandra in that one.
Yeah, I know, right?
Wait, I just spotted that. What is that about?
Oh. Card advantage?
Yeah, card advantage. Okay, makes sense.
When your cards are that good. Probably works.
Let's see here. Fifth place? Is this fifth place? Mm-hmm. I lost count. Yes.
Yep.
Fifth place is Ray Wee playing Abzan Midrange with Sigarda.
Ooh. Yep.
Seems pretty good.
Yeah, she's kind of ridiculous, right?
I like to think so.
Yeah.
I mean, as the blue-white-red control deck's been pushed out of the format, it's not like there's a whole lot of Wraths that kill Sigarda.
And you're running two of them.
No, there's only one.
Two Wraths.
No, two Wraths. Oh, right. Her. Next, Yuta Takahashi is running Tamer Twin, formerly known as Tarmo Twin, formerly known as the Twin Deck with Green in it.
Yeah.
I like Tarmo Twin as a name.
It's a lot better than Tamer Twin, even though it sounds very similar. Mm-hmm. It's less descriptive. Well, it's not really less descriptive, because it's Twin with Tarmogoyf. Tarmo Twin.
Twinagoyf.
Twinagoyf.
I guess we're playing a roast, so that makes it Teemer. That's the second one on the board.
Because flavor. Yeah. let's see. What's... Oh, crap. Wrong button.
Seventh?
That would be this guy. Tae Jun Hao. Four Color Collected Company. This is the Podless Pod.
Yep.
Not the Elves version.
Oh, man. It's playing Deceiver Exarch and Restoration Angel and Kiki Jiki. It's literally Angel Pod.
Yeah, yeah.
Rocking it. Do you need a moment?
No, I'm good. There's a Keranos on the board.
Yep. Well, obviously.
Yeah, he's running blue and red. There's got to be one in the board, right? That's a
all the greed. This deck is so wonderfully greedy.
That is a requirement if you're running those two colors. Yeah. You have to have one Keranos on the board or they won't let you in the room.
Unless you're on coverage, in which case you have to have one in the main. I don't understand.
It helps. Well,
this guy had neither. The next deck.
Oh, he's fired. Let's see. Who is this? Joshua Yang. How do you pronounce that?
Jian?
Bill, you got anything? You're a resident guy that's going to pronounce things.
Not my language.
It's
that's racist.
Jian.
But he is running a more different Tarmo Twin. No, Teemer Delver. Excuse me. Tarmo Delver. Hooting Mandrills, damn it. He's got Hooting Mandrills in the deck. Which one do you think it is?
He's playing a Tarfire just for the Tarmogoyf boost.
That is the way of the old times.
Wow.
It's really effective at that.
I guess you do that if you expect to not be running into as many Goyfs, right?
Yeah, if you don't expect the mirror, Tarfire makes all your Goyfs 5/6s.
Yeah, pretty easily.
Weird. All right, so that was the top eight. Do we run through the top five cards since Clues isn't here?
We probably should.
Okay.
That goes so much faster when the deck lists are in order.
It really does.
That's amazing. All right, yeah. Top five cards.
Top five cards.
Top five cards.
There are five of them. Number five. Oh, by Chapman Sim. Good job, Chapman Sim.
Yay.
I'm going to give you credit for making the deck list in order because I don't know who else to credit. So good job for that, too. Number five, Goryeo's Vengeance. Because get back here.
Apparently this was a big thing even though it didn't make the top eight.
Well, I mean, you see who's getting with it, right?
Grisholbrand? Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, that guy. Dr. Grisholbrand.
No, I mean, right here...
He's not a real doctor, though. You shouldn't trust him.
He's calling it Grisholbrand because of the nursing shoal.
Oh.
You know...
Grisholbrand. That makes my tongue hurt.
I'm so happy that this happened sometimes when I see nursing shoal.
Hmm. Anyway, next...
Number four, Huntmaster of the Fells. Everyone's favorite lumberjack werewolf.
Who comes with a friend.
I hear he's okay.
He is. He's got a wolf and he changes during the day. Yeah, he's pretty awesome still. Like the only good card to come out of that set, right?
Dark Ascension? Yeah, because the new Sorin replaced the old Sorin.
Yep. Poor Sorin.
Poor Sorin. He's had like the most consistently good printing.
You're right. Planeswalker.
He's up there.
Like, he started off as, he's alright. And then he's just been good.
I think the only one that's done better is Elspeth. She's 3 for 3.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
So good they killed her and it didn't even stop her.
Not at all.
Now I'm sad again.
It's cool. Blood Moon's number 3.
Yeah, it is.
The card that's just running away with the format.
I mean, it's very effective against a number of decks. And look at it.
It's sort of a... Like, people complain it's too powerful, but I think it's more of a balance check, right? It's to make sure, it's to keep some decks honest.
Yeah.
It's like the existence of, twin decks that can just, I win, keeps decks honest to where they have to be prepared to handle that. The existence of Blood Moon is the same thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's also, the thing is, they stopped printing relevant land hate because it was too good. And Blood Moon, remember, costs the same as Stone Rain, and Stone Rain is too good.
Blood Moon has that wonderful trait of just stopping the amulet deck dead, and that's why I'm not ever worried about that deck being too good.
Yeah, people say, well, my deck auto-loses to Blood Moon. I'm like, well, then maybe you shouldn't play that deck, right?
You should find a way to, you know, take care of Blood Moon.
Yeah, maybe you should fix that problem instead of complaining about it. So I think that's good. In a way. Now, if it becomes too oppressive, I'm sure people will call for the ban, and it hopefully will not be. But, you know, whatever.
I would not want to play that format without a Blood Moon running around, even if I was never going to play Blood Moon.
Right?
That just sounds like a miserable experience of losing to Combo Amulet.
Well, I don't even think it's that. You suddenly end up with four-color good stuff Jundex, which is just, like, super greedy. Like, suddenly you have Jund playing Liliana and Lingering Souls and a Johnny Vengeant and Chandra and...
That sounds a lot like what it wants to do anyway, but now they're punished. They can be greedy, but, you know, they're going to lose, like, every fourth round to Blood Moon, and that means they don't make it to the end, so we're happy.
Do you guys remember when the Jund deck in Modern actually was playing white for Johnny Vengeance and Lingering Souls? Like, this wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, no. That's
I remember
why I
when every deck was four-color Elspeth. Like, oh, look, and there's Elspeth. Yay. Here's Elspeth in my mono black deck. What?
I
mean, like, there are cards that are that good, and this stops them. Speaking of amazing, number two is Spellskite. So amazing.
Spellskite's ability can target everything. You can actually target that Tarmogoyf on the stack with Spellskite. It doesn't do anything, but you can do that.
If I went back in time and had more time to think about the questions from Charlotte, I would have probably actually said Spellskite for my two drop. It's a really good card, and I've had a lot of fun playing it.
It is pretty awesome.
It's done a lot of things that I don't think people are ready to deal with. Like, there are just so many games where you play a Spellskite and they just look at their deck and they're like, oh. And it's not like through any fault of Spellskite being too good. It just really punishes people who can't work around a, you know, four toughness creature. And I love
it. Which leads us to our number one card.
Galvanic Blast, which will totally deal with that four toughness creature. Sometimes.
Most of the time.
Most of the
time. In the deck that's running it all the time. Wonderful. And that's Modern.
Yay. Top five card.
Top five card.
Card. cards.
So let's move on to the standard, shall we?
The standard. The small standard.
The, yeah, how many people were here? This was the Buenos Aires, right?
Yep. 700 people.
Oh, there we go. Round number. Okay. That is a nice round number. And look, Pascal Maynard won. That's awesome. You guys remember him?
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah, he was the guy with the foil goif that now everyone knows who he is because people thought he made the bad choice. Ah, idiots.
So. I really hope that when he showed up, he's like, you know how I got here? You want to know how I paid for the trip? Do you? Huh?
There was someone talking with him on Twitter the other day about how he absolutely destroys GPs and still hasn't made day two of a Pro Tour yet, I think was what it was. So I'm sure he's going to fix that this time. He's been on a tear.
I mean, people like us who pay attention to this sort of thing, we all know who Pascal Maynard is. We all know the name, but now everybody knows who he is. So. Right.
I mean, I want him to win one of these tournaments with the literal Tarmogoyf tied behind his back. Not that he's playing it, just that I wanted to be there. It'd be wonderful.
like the gun in Die Hard.
Exactly.
Just taped to his back.
And a sleeve, though. I mean, we're not crazy.
Right, but, right.
Yeah. Is that part of your deck? No.
Nope.
Can you get it in? It would be very difficult. Judge, my opponent's sideboard is taped to his back. There's no chance of confusing it with this library. I don't see the problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's especially because it's in that nice hard plastic case.
Yeah. It's totally in a top loader.
He's not stupid. Hey, he's winning.
So he was running the Abzan Megamorph deck with the Cha-Cha Raptor and the Den Mother, or Den Protector, rather.
Right.
And the rest of the deck is what you'd expect.
But look at those three Elspeth.
Yeah, I don't know. This is actually Abzan Megamorph control. We're going even bigger.
Oh god, here we go again.
Yep.
So are these in decklist in order too?
Yeah.
Is that right? Did someone check these?
I did.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, they're in order.
Ridiculous.
So Jacob Van Lunen and Mark Colorado. Good job.
Yeah, assuming it was you guys.
I mean, that's who wrote the article.
I know, I've bothered, what article? Oh, I'm in the drop down. I'm not in the top 8 decklists separate thing.
Well, the drop down is correct.
Okay, so good.
You can proceed forward with impunity.
All right. Marcos Paulo de Jesus is playing a red-green devotion, which is the green devotion that plays Xenagos and, wait.
Dragonlord Atarka.
Oh, there it is. Okay. I was like, I don't see it. That's right. It's because I'm dumb. Okay. Moving on. Fabio Anselmo is playing Mardu, and it doesn't say Mardu Dragons, but it's
Mardu Dragons.
It's pretty much Mardu Dragons. Yeah. It's got Baby Kolaghan, Stormbreath, and Thunderbreak. Sorry, Thunderstruck Regent. Also, right. Ashcloud Phoenix, two of those doing a damn good impression of dragons.
Yeah, Honorary Dragon.
Yeah. Did you guys know Soulfire Grandmaster was a 2-drop? I, for some reason, because that's ridiculous, when someone...
It is a wonderful card.
When someone gave that to me as their answer...
It's a good answer.
In three questions of, you know, your favorite 2-drop, they're like, Soulfire Grandmaster right now? And I'm like, is that a 2-drop? Yeah. Oh my god!
It feels so good.
It's in the running for the best white 2-drops. I mean, it's not the best. You know who that is, but it's up there.
Yeah. It feels so good to Draconic Roar with one in play.
Oh my gosh. Oh my god. All right, moving on. Let's get out of this. More different Mardu Dragons by... How would you pronounce this person's name? Thales? Thales?
Thales Santos?
Thales? Yeah, this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, is playing Mardu Dragons again. This one has Rabble Masters because it's funnier that way.
Yeah, somebody's got to feed them.
Yeah.
And Seekers of the Way.
Oh, yeah, look at that. Because it's even funnier.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Nicholas de Nicola is playing the Esper Dragons. What?
They're back.
It's alive, and someone's still playing it and doing well with it.
Yep. It's not going to be alive for much longer.
Nope.
Well, it's got another, what, 3 months?
There are some cards that hose it pretty hard coming up in the previews.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Say politely.
I don't pay attention to previews until I'm recording about it. And so,
that's totally fair.
Yeah. So I did not know that, but we'll assume you're right. Next up, Renzo Chapa is playing Abzan Aggro. Herald of Torment. Good old Harry.
I'm going to miss that card.
Herald of Henderson's.
The card is pretty awesome. And everything else is... Born in the First Street. Boo! Okay, everything else is fine. Moving on. that is 8th place, click this one instead, stupid mouse. Rodrigo Soto is playing a more different Abzan aggro, but not too different. It's just different enough. Two Sorens. Were there Den Protectors in the previous deck?
No.
Did not think so.
No, we went up to Wingmate Rocks instead.
Right.
Oh, we got Wingmate Rocks here, too.
Yeah, wait, I was going to say, hang on, something's wrong here. All right, so that's that. Oh, you made a home sound, and then you stopped.
These decks have the same number of lands, the same number of creatures, and roughly the same number of instants. I'm confused how he managed to fit in two Sorin in this list.
Well, first of all, he's running 61. So.
Oh, there we go.
That's awkward.
The Michael Shiver approach to deckcraft.
That second Sorin was very important.
And then Facundo Conde is playing an Abzan control deck with much more control and much less not control.
Yeah. Such a weird mix of control cards.
Only Den Protectors, no Raptors.
Because if he played the Footless Raptor, then it would be an Abzan Megamorph deck, apparently. So,
well, there's that.
Yay, so there was your top 8.
Yay.
I can't wait for Standard to, you know,
do its thing.
Do something else here soon.
I think it will.
Oh, man.
Did anyone else notice that in Pascal Maynard's top 8, profile picture here, he's holding a little sign that says, "I'm coming for you, Alexander Hain."
Oh, you see, the unfortunate thing of the C profile really breaks that text for me when I'm trying to read it. Because it says, first place, I'm Pascal Maynard. And I'm like, that's true, but this isn't helping.
Huh. I wonder what the story there is. I'm sure someone knows.
When I click on the picture to see his bigger one, yes, I can read that.
So, yeah.
All right.
It does say I'm Pascal Maynard. Ha! That's pretty funny. Well, yes, you are.
I mean, it's true.
All right, so...
Like top... he's picking himself up at the airport. Top 5 cards.
Top 5 cards.
Top 5 cards.
Good call. Yeah, go with that one. by Jacob Van Lunen and Mark Calderaro. Number 5, Sidisi Blood Tyrant.
Brood.
I read that like it was English. That's funny. Yes, Sidisi Brood Tyrant. And look at her. She's still great. Oh, there's Natarka. Oh.
This is another one that wasn't in the top 8, but was still prevalent enough to make the list. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Just so you know, it is a detrimental trigger to miss your Sidisi mill.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. That makes sense.
I had to give out a couple warnings for that this weekend.
Yeah, that is not something you should forget. Aside from it being part of your deck, you have to do it.
Yeah.
But look at that. There's a Whip of Erebos with an Atarka next to it.
Oh, my God. The Lansdell's
so much life gain and damage.
Lansdell's playing this list right now, and I was watching him play it at FNM. It's literally the most ridiculous thing.
Because you tap your Whip, and suddenly they've taken 13 damage, and you're up 13 life, and oh, God, everything's dying?
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, that sounds fine, yeah.
13's a good number. It's very Innistrad-friendly.
Yeah.
Number 4, Dragonlord Slumgar, who can't be bothered to get up for this picture.
He's like, so oh, ooh, ooh, ooh.
It's certainly...
He laughs like a Zelda boss?
I guess that did sort of come across that way, yeah. My bad.
Excellent. No, it's fine, it works.
It was supposed to be the Jabba the Hutt laugh, but it came out Zelda boss, and I'm not sure why.
Apparently, Lazy Lord Slumgar has now replaced Drifting Derp in Espa Dragons, which is ridiculous because it just dies.
Wait a minute, that was also the laugh in Mario 64 when you encountered Bowser.
Bowser, yeah.
He's like, rrr, 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 rrr.
That's true.
Huh. Way to go, Nintendo.
I'm pretty sure you could also take down Dragonlord Slumgar if he challenges you on a circle with 4 bombs in each corner for no reason.
Yeah.
So. Gives you a goal, right?
Yeah, yeah. Because he certainly can't turn around before you get to his tail.
Nah, man. You see that? He hasn't moved in like 6,000 years.
Next.
Number 3, Stormbreath Dragon. Because more dragons.
Pretty much,
be a theme, by the way. Stormbreath Dragon, still good. Ride now that's last few months of being in Standard. Like a champion. Number 2, Dragonlord Atarka. Because more dragons.
Somewhat ridiculous.
Yeah, we just talked about how awesome he is. Though it is noteworthy you're correct. Yes. How amazing Dragonlord Atarka is. And it's noteworthy that, Marcus Paulo de Jesus Freitas? Freitas.
Jesus Freitas.
Jesus Freitas. Excellent. Played four copies of it, which is impressive for a seven drop.
A seven drop legendary.
Yeah. Well, you don't really care if they die because you want to cast another one anyway.
I have actually seen green red players just cast an Atarka over an Atarka.
I mean,
just
why not?
For five more damage.
Good lord. His name was so long, they didn't put it all in the deck list. So when I read off his second place deck, I called him Marcos Paulo de Jesus. And because that's all it says.
Yeah, that was sort of what tripped me up while I was reading, and I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, because there's an extra word there that they didn't put in the deck list. It says Marcos Paulo de Jesus's red-green devotion. Like, wait.
Yeah. Well.
So sorry about that. It's not my fault. Write me angry emails, but not about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be justified. And number one is Elspeth Sun's Champion, who is still amazing and is going to probably continue to be a powerhouse for the next 3 months while she still can. So.
I mean, you gotta have a card that kills all the dragons and not your dudes.
Kills everything. Sea Drinos will die.
Well, they need to, so.
Yeah. Death Mist Raptors will die.
If they've been flipped over.
Which, you know, they better be. Otherwise, even better. Otherwise, they will be chump blocked. And yeah, Elspeth's still great. She's one of the few planeswalkers that I've seen who was amazing out of the gate and actually held up that level for pretty much the entirety of Standard.
Yeah, so. She fell out of favor for a while, but I never did understand why, and now she's back again, so.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So good on her.
Yeah.
And that's top five cards.
Top five!
Cards. Alright.
And finally, let's run through the Star City Baltimore.
Baltimore.
Because why not? So.
Because you want more decks.
Standard, I really don't. Legacy, modern. So Standard, Andrew Boswell won with Abzan Aggro, followed by a green-red devotion, Bant Megamorph, Jeskai Aggro, green-red Megamorph. Damn it, now I have to look. So it is, it's essentially, it's a mono-green Megamorph deck with Teamer Sabertooth. Remember that? And it's splashing red for Xenagos.
Oh, yeah.
Look at the next list.
What is the next list? Hang on. Mono Red Goblins. Hey, look at that. And Pile Driver isn't even legal yet.
Give it time. So glorious.
That was being played by Bobby Birmingham, who is famous somewhat tragically for his teammates replacing his sealed deck at Atlantic City with a slice of pizza.
What?
So he told his friends he was going to drop. He went to the bathroom. And they took his deck out of the deck box that we got at AC.
Oh no.
And they put a slice of pizza in it.
That is so not cool.
And closed it back up. And he came back from the bathroom and said he was going to play his next round and sat down at the table, opened the deck up, pulled out the slice of pizza.
Presented pizza to his opponent.
And he's like, all right, I'm done. And his opponent goes, I don't want to win this way, and also drops. Like, this pizza killed two people out of the tournament.
Do not do this to your friends. They are not your friends if you do this. That is horrible.
Also, take your deck with you to the bathroom. Put it in a pocket. Don't leave it with your idiot friends.
Don't leave it with your soon-to-be ex-friends.
Right?
That is horrible. But hey, look at that. For Obelisk of Urd.
But this list is... Like, when I heard that this list had made day two, because I was doing deck lists for day one, I was like, wow, this is an absolutely amazing list. I'm super happy to see it day two. And then it made top eight. And that doesn't bode well for the format going forward.
It's just a Star City. It's not like a top eight at a real tournament.
That's true.
Yeah.
There were two real tournaments going on while this was happening.
Yeah, I said it.
Well, there was also the RPTQ, so.
Ooh.
Next up, seventh place is a mono red devotion deck. Oh, right. Okay. It's running Fanatic of Mogus. And, well, I guess that's really it.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, to be fair, that's all you need for, a devotion deck.
Ooh, Dragon Whisperer.
Yeah, it's playing Dragon Whisperers. I want
that's
this
pretty
to
cool.
Be good.
You are not alone, but I think you will probably be disappointed in the long run.
Probably. And finally, eighth place is a green-red devotion deck. So, okay, let's go to... Which one is this? Miracles. This is Legacy.
Legacy.
Bob Marshall won with Sultai is what? Bug Delver. And then Death and Taxes in second, Dredge. I'm guessing not the Mentalist variety. Nope. Four Color Delver, two copies of Miracles, three copies of Miracles, and then a Rug Delver. No. Rub Delver. Excuse me, Grixis.
Rub.
In 8th. Okay. And then Modern. We didn't say how many people were in any of these. There were 444 in Standard, 178 in Legacy, and 212 in Modern. And what the hell is Naya Company? Oh, this is the collected company like Naya Zoo deck.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I like this.
I remember so many of these cards. This is a good times.
Yeah, I am glad the collected company is not just for Podless Pod or for elves. It's also just put in zoo decks, which makes perfect sense. I like it.
I mean, how else are you going to put all of these separate creatures into a disciplined rabble? You've got to collect them into a company.
That's terrible.
That said, you know, use your awesome Night of Reliquaries to get a little bit ahead and then collected company into two smiters and then the world just ended. Great.
Pretty much, yeah. Your opponent says bad words, you win, you know, it's fine.
It is the way of things.
But that was Steven Borakov's deck. I hope I pronounced that at least sort of right. Second is your Grixis twin, then Jund, then Infect, then a red-white burn, then another Infect, then a Grixis Delver, and a blue-red twin to round out the top eight there.
I do want to point out there was blue-white Merfolk at 11th, and Ad Nauseam at 12th, and
more Goryeo's Vengeance in 13th.
Yeah, more of the ridiculous Grizzlebrand list with Nourishing Shoal.
Yeah.
Naya Coco.
Yeah, which is almost the same deck as the one above that they just called Naya Company, so I'm not sure why they
maybe
altered that.
It's tastier.
It may be, yeah, maybe there was some chocolate on it. I don't know.
I hope so.
I love chocolate. Ooh.
Maybe his friends messed with his deck box.
This one's playing Magus's of the Moon. Is the other one playing Magus of the Moon? As opposed to Blood Moon?
I mean, you can company it.
If you're playing company, you probably should be.
Just one. The first place deck was just playing one Magus of the Moon and one Blood Moon.
Mm, okay.
And one Choke. Just hate on the lands.
Yeah, well, what have they ever done for you?
So let's see here. I guess we'll just move into the rest of the news then.
Makes sense to me.
All right. The Origins promo cards are up in the Arcana. There's a really pretty Relic Seeker for the Buy a Box.
Yeah.
A
Mizzium Meddler.
A sort of pretty Mizzium Meddler for the launch event promo. Game day is the Full Art Conclave Naturalists. Which
upgraded
for some reason.
Intric Storm Powers.
Which is, for some reason, is harder for me to say. Conclave Naturalists.
It's a nice picture.
And it is a nice picture, actually. It's very pretty.
There's a good use of the actual full frame.
Yeah, unlike Languish, which is the top eight and is shiny, but the full frame, you really just get...
It's like, oh, look, some sticks.
Yeah, you just get the bottom of the art, which was cropped out because it's pointless, so...
Yeah, that said, you probably want to get that Languish because the card's probably going to be relevant.
Probably.
I'm actually just happy that the launch promo isn't something that's going to not be unplayable. Like, I love Sandstep Mastodon to death because who doesn't like giant elephants that come with eight bolster counters? But, Mizzium Meddler is going to be a playable card.
Yeah. He's a blue spell skite.
Yeah.
I mean, not exactly, but he serves a similar role. So, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. And in the midst of all this pretty, the super pretty is the game day playmat winner, game day winner playmat, which.
It's so much better than so many of the game day playmats.
Yeah, it's really nice.
I'm remembering the bright orange Nicol Bolas one from a few years ago.
Oh.
Yeah, this is much nicer. And actually just the art on it's really cool too. It's like you're pulling a lightsaber out of a tree.
I want to know where her swords went. Like, there's all these pictures of Nissa with swords pre-Spark, and then it's like post-Spark Nissa's all about staffs.
I think telling you here in this playmat art is that the sword is in the staff.
That would be interesting.
Pretty neat.
Yeah.
But yeah, so those are some cards that you can get.
Yeah, if you want to see the pretty, the link is in the show notes as always.
Yeah.
Next up, they made a big deal out of, no, we did actually, of the
we
Clash
Pack. We were confused,
pack.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Clash Pack face cards not being shown, and now they have, and someone else talk about this, I'm going to sneeze.
All right, so the new card from among the Clash Packs is the Honored Hierarch, and that's the spiritual successor to the Noble Hierarch, which isn't as good, but is still pretty good. And the other card that's in here is Dromoka the Eternal. So that was sort of unexpected.
Yeah.
I like that. That's just weird.
I love this art because it, It reminds me of Ghostbusters for some reason.
Oh, it's not for some reason. It's pretty obvious. It's an alternate art, Jermok of the Eternal, by the way. Is this an alternate art?
I think so.
Yes, these are both alternates.
Oh, yeah, he even says it right there. Okay.
DeChomps posted when the image was released. He's like, I like this Jermoka much better than mine.
Yeah, but...
Wow. Well, this Jermoka admittedly does look like it's about to mess you up, so... Yeah, I find it interesting, because the Clash Packs are designed to work well together, mashed together into a better deck, that one of the gold cards is, green, or like the gold card is green, white, and the other one is straight green, and you can directly just looking at it without ever knowing what's in both of them go, I'm going to put those in the same deck, which serves the function, so.
And you can look at both of them and go, hey, they both like 1/1 counters.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to do a good job of actually working, so we'll see.
Let's hope so. And there's also alternate art Seeker of the Way that you can get in here too with also pretty sweet art.
Yeah, this is a bit neater than walking on that bridge that we've seen so much the last year.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
There's also an alternate art Seeker of the Way.
Which we totally just got done talking about right then.
Sorry, I was looking to see if we had the deck lists because I wasn't sure if they released those last week or
not. They are not.
No, it says... Well, I just closed the link, but it says that they'll reveal the deck list next week when it said more of the set or the full
more
set.
More of the Origins cards are previewed. They want you to actually be able to see what the cards in the deck list are.
Right.
So.
Which makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think from here, we have to mention one card that is in the set so that Bill can read a statement from Clues.
It's Truce.
And we mentioned it once, the Goblin Pile Driver has been reprinted.
Which is a very big deal.
It is a very big deal. It is a huge source of damage in the Legacy Goblins deck. So the Pile Driver, just real quick, for one and a red, is a Goblin Warrior. It's a 1/2. It's pro blue. That means protection from blue. And it's not for blue. It's against blue, but it's pro blue. Does that make sense? No.
Yeah.
And whenever, this is the important part, whenever Goblin Pile Driver attacks, it gets +2/+0 until end of turn for each other attacking goblin. This thing paired with the,
Siege
Grabble Rabble?
No, the War Chief, the Goblin War Chief in, Standard was huge back in the day, and it has been huge ever since, up until relatively recently when goblins fell out of favor in Legacy for the more straightforward burn deck. But that was just within the last year, I think, because Clues was always a Legacy Burn player, or a Legacy Goblins player, and then he sort of put it down for Burn because the format was just leaning more that way.
Yeah. But this also introduces Goblin Pile Driver to Modern, I believe.
Yeah.
That's correct.
So. Because
it was printed in Onslaught Block, which was the last block before Modern.
So this will be most likely affecting Modern. On some level, it will definitely be affecting Standard for at least the 3 months when it overlaps with some of the existing awesome cards.
Yeah, Rabble Master, like Rabble most Master. Notably. Yeah.
But like when your 2-drop is attacking for 5 or 7, you've got a pretty powerful card, and it will be doing that. So.
Because it has to attack if you put Rabble Master in play.
Yeah. And the Pro Blue will just be brutal to some decks. So. So Clues asked me to read a statement that he prepared with regards to the release of Goblin Pile Driver. So I will now don my reading glasses, which are my normal glasses, and I will read the statement very clearly. All right, everybody ready?
Yes.
That was the statement.
You know, Clues brings up some good points here, and I really think he did a better job of vocalizing them than I currently am, because I keep going,
He is very excited about what this has for the future of both Modern and Standard. And in general, the presence of the Pile Driver implies that the final core set will indeed be nostalgia-tastic, as we had hoped, outside of just the Planeswalker backstories. So, pretty awesome.
I'm also really happy when Sam Stoddard revealed the Pile Driver, he was talking about how they wanted to design lords that weren't necessarily always just... Your dudes get 1/1 in an effect. And so they're printing Pile Driver as the Goblin Lord for the set. And so I'm really excited to see going forward how they do lords in this slightly more different way.
Hmm.
Because the Merfolk Lord that got spoiled, which we'll talk about here in a moment.
Oh, we will. We'll go right ahead.
Well, he's on the spoiler.
I don't know what he's called, so.
Okay, so Harbinger of Tides is a 2/2 Morphoak wizard. He costs blue. You can cast it as though it had flash if you pay 2 more to cast it. When it enters the battlefield, you may return target tapped creature an opponent controls to its owner's hand.
And that's a lord?
I mean, it occupies the same spot as all the other lords. Maybe it's not a lord.
I would say I don't think this one would be. Ow, my. God.
It's a man of war, but it's a man of war in the fish deck that does a very good job of undoing their turn 2 if you're on the draw.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it specifies taps, just to clarify that, but there are enough things to make this a solid second creature to play on turn 4 or to just drop out with your Aether Vial or whatever it is that you're doing, that it will see some power. It also might give those last 3 months of blue devotion and standard a shot, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, because now there's a blue 2-drop.
That's good.
It's very good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. It should be interesting.
Word? And also, Sam Stodd wrote about how R&D handles reprints. And he actually, I tried to read it before we got started, and I couldn't because it was too long. I'm going to have to actually, like, put some time aside to sit down and read it. But he makes a lot of good points about why reprints and why not reprints and this and that and the other and some of the factors working against reprints and that sort of thing. The link is in the show notes. I highly recommend that. It was the not even half of it I got through was pretty good. Yay.
Hooray. Also not going to go into specific cards because I know that Chewy's going to be doing that on his show and every other podcast is going to be doing it too. But I do like the fact that we have some mythic non-creature spells, like non-creature, non-planeswalker spells.
Really? Because,
yeah, like each color has one, I think.
They're
all pretty awesome in very different ways. I won't go into them, but it's nice just to see that they can do mythics that aren't super weird clunky spell and aren't, you know, aggressively costed creature or powerful planeswalker. Like, you would think that we'd see those more often, but I haven't really seen a disappointment mythic in this set yet, so. I also have a feeling that this set is going to have a lot for the aspiring judges to have to figure out between the Starfield of Nyx being a weird opalescency effect.
I already had a conversation about this and the Theros gods. It gets weird depending on what comes into play first.
It does indeed. But then there's also multiple spells that do weird stuff that involve either restarting the game effectively, or at least in terms of your hands, or there's a green spell that behaves a lot like a red spell that pretty much warps the world. So that's kind of neat too. There's just a bunch of weird stuff going on. It'll be fun to play.
The best thing is that it represents Lorwyn switching over to Shadowmoor.
Yes, which is pretty cool. And it's not Scapeshift. So.
But.
There's one card that I wanted to talk about that's not on the list, but it's all right.
Oh, what's that?
Oh, they printed, they're going to print Chandra's Goggles, and they cost 5, it costs 5 to play it, and you can tap it to add a red to your mana pool, and if you cast a instant or, red instant or sorcery with it, you can copy it.
Oh, yeah, I saw that somewhere.
So between the goggles and the Pyromaster's Gauntlets, you can slowly just have the Chandra cosplay deck? Urza cosplay deck?
Put them together.
Got this armor, got these, you know, spectacles, got this hot tub. It's going to be amazing.
Sunglasses. Don't forget the sunglasses.
Got to have the sunglasses. Got the tower. Yeah, there you go. We just make the cosplay deck. It'll be terrible and amazing.
Oh, Lord. All right. So I guess are we done with that then?
I believe so.
Okay. Just checking. In less good news, there's apparently a new batch of the really high quality Chinese fakes.
Which is unfortunate, because the whole reason we changed the card frames and did all this stuff a year ago was to get around this crap. But here we are. I have not read this post and Reddit is not loading, so I'll let you guys talk.
Well, I mean, I don't have anything to talk about other than beware, as always, they've added new cards to their repertoire, like some Guru lands, some Unhinged lands.
Oh, so do we know if any of the new card frame cards are in here? I'm scrolling down the list. It finally loaded for me, but
oh, good.
I'm not actually seeing anything in the new frame. So maybe the new frame is working, or maybe the new cards just aren't worth enough to be worth the trouble.
That's probably more the case. Yeah.
Um, A thing to note is that the Guru Lands that are fakes do not have the gold leafing for the set symbol.
Ah, okay. Well, that's a dead giveaway then.
So,
yeah, anything
if you want
to
make sure you
see it.
So, if you want to make sure if your basics are authentic, buy Guru.
Or, you know, use basics.
Just use any basics out of the draft pile over there. Yeah,
right,
that's probably
yeah.
fine too.
And if they are,
I mean, what?
And if the ones out of the draft pile over there are counterfeit, well, then I think it'll be okay.
It means somebody was stupid.
It's sort of like who would counterfeit ones.
Yeah, it pretty much goes back to try to know the people you're trading with, and in general, keep an eye out. But at the end of the day,
yeah,
there's only so much you can do unless you start bending and burning cards.
Yeah, as the old saying goes, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. Do some research, and if you don't know, find someone that does.
Yeah, you're very unlikely to find the person who doesn't know how good their cards are at this point. It is not that hard to Google the value of your stuff. So if someone plays the dumb person who's like, well, I just wanted to get $20, here's a collection, they're probably ripping you off.
It should be noted that all of these fakes still fail the light test because they're black core instead of blue core. So all you really need to do is like crack a pack, look at some commons, like put an LED light behind them, and you should pretty much know instantaneously.
Neat. And there are videos on YouTube showing you how to do this, by the way. So if you're curious about what you're looking for, they will show you.
Very true. All right, then. So okay. The link to the Reddit thread is in the show notes, as always. I guess that all the news? Looks like
it. I think
so. Yeah, I believe so.
Okay, so that leaves one more fun thing and one more personal thing. So the fun thing, Spellslingers, which is done over on the Geek and Sundry YouTube channel, starts the third season starts sometime?
Ooh.
Soon? Oh, here we go. Premieres July 1st at 10 a.m. Okay, there you go. Don't play the video while I'm recording, stupid YouTube. And in case you don't know what that is, it's Sean Plott, who is Day 9, who's a streamer. I think he became famous as a StarCraft player originally.
Correct.
And now he is a streamer and game designer and that sort of thing. I actually watch his, YouTube videos on Hearthstone relatively frequently because he's entertaining as all hell and he builds the weirdest decks to just play just because. So, but what he's doing is playing Magic in Spellslingers against, his guests. And his guests are big names that are not just Magic players. So, like, for instance, Chris Cluey is one of, the players from season 3 who, you know, used to be an NFL player and is big on being a nerd and an athlete and all that. He's been on several podcasts. You can look him up. But also Felicia Day, Alan Tudyk, John Hader, like these guys. You guys know these guys? Of course you do. If you watch movies, you know these guys.
And movies.
Movies. So yeah, it's nice that Geek and Sundry and Day 9 here are working to try to get Magic out more into the mainstream by having people on the show that aren't just, you know, LSV. You know, people who are known for Magic. These are people that are known for other things playing Magic, and that is awesome. And I know on his stream he rants and raves about how amazing the crew for Spellslingers is. Said the crew, it's one of the most well-organized crews he's ever worked with, so that only says good things about the quality of the show if the crew is that good that he mentions it out of the blue on his stream. Like, oh my god, the crew. I've heard him do it many times. It's actually kind of funny. So yay, go check that out. And of course, seasons 1 and 2 are already up if you want to, you know, pay any attention to that. And the other thing is that in the Serious Fun article last week, and we talked about this on the Manipool, so apologies if you've heard it already, but Bruce Richard starts off with, I was listening to an episode of the podcast The Manipool when World Wake cards were being previewed. And I was like, what?
Those were the days.
I was like, wow, we're going pretty deep on this one.
Yeah, because one of our running jokes on the Manipool ever, and it started, I guess, when World Wake came out, was, but what if it costs 2 less? And it's just, anytime it's relevant, and sometimes when it's not, we bring it up constantly. And Bruce referenced it in his article here, which is looking at Flame Shadow Conjuring as Minion Reflector, but what if it costs less? So, a big thank you to Bruce. And everyone, if you don't read Serious Fun articles, one, why not?
With a name like that, how can you not?
Because it's seriously fun. I mean, yeah. Duh. Hello?
You're not even trying.
But yeah, big thanks to Bruce for the shout out there. He's a sweetheart. We've had him on the show several times, or at least a couple times. I know we always mean to have him on the show several times. So yeah, everybody check that out and go listen to the Manipool because Bruce does and Bruce is awesome.
There you go.
Can confirm Manipool awesome.
Yeah.
And while I've never met Bruce, I can confirm he's awesome. So it's fine.
It's cool though. You've never met Bruce?
Not in person. No.
Oh, it feels like we have. Oh God, I'm going crazy. Or yeah, maybe I'm seeing the future.
He was supposed to be in Jersey and then decided not to go. And then I decided to go and he was like, well, damn it. Clues has met Bruce.
Oh, maybe I'm thinking of Clues talking about meeting Bruce.
Yeah, we living vicariously through Clues. I hate it when that happens.
I mean, it does happen, though.
With his radio telescopes.
And his Skynet.
As long as his science can doesn't explode again.
Yeah, I think we'll be all right until that happens.
That'll be what stops us from being all right.
It's exactly. So, shall we go to Mitgo?
Sure. Good old Mitgo the Moto. Magic the Gathering Online updates for the week. I've got a link to the article as usual. The ever-present reminder that this comes out on Tuesdays, so you should check this on Tuesday to see the most current one. But as of last week's Tuesday news update, the Modern Festival has begun. They're running now. These are preliminary qualifiers for the Modern Festival Finals, which you probably want to get in on. They'll be running through Wednesday, I presume till the downtime Wednesday, so you've got a little bit of time left if you want to get in on that. The reason it's pretty awesome is because this weekend on the 5th, Sunday, you'll get to see people playing off for, or I guess you can sort of hover watch it, but regardless, the finals are going to consist of people playing with the grand prize being a set of every card in Modern, along with online foil sets of both Modern Masters and Modern Masters 2015. So that's what the winner gets. As things tick down, it's more like full sets of Modern Masters 2015 or foil sets and just neat stuff all the way down. So that's pretty amazing. If you're interested in that, I've got a link here to more information about it, the formatting of, you know, how it's played, the different queues, all that stuff. The link's right here. Also of note, the Phantom Drafts for Mirrored and Block are currently live. So if you would like to experience the wonderful world of Decepticons, you can do that. Mm. I don't know that you necessarily want to, but there it is. There's a reason it gave us scars. But it'll be there. And hey, look, Lightning Helix promo, right?
Yay.
That's pretty great. I mean, I think it's great.
Okay, it's great then, yes.
I don't think anyone's going to argue with Lightning Helix. It's an amazing spell.
I mean, you take 3 to the face if you do, so.
Yeah. I mean, I hear for some people it's worth a lot of money. And also, just as general news, they've provided a list of all of the pre-release and release events for Magic Online's version of Magic Origins, which will be on Magic Online on July 24th. So if you'd like to check out all of the different queues, different events, things going on there, your opportunity to get the different avatars based on each of the young Planeswalkers, all that fun stuff, you can go get your Nissa avatar so that you can play Hunger Games whenever you want to. It'll be great. All that's in there, the breakdown of the different formats, the ticket costs. Just as a note, if you've never done a pre-release online, you sort of, when you opt in, you have to get these tokens that are essentially represent the 5 different decks, and whichever one you pick is the pre-release deck that you get, essentially, you know, like those boxes that you get at the paper ones. Unlike the real ones, there's no limited supply on a given one if people decide it's the one they want, so things get a little bit skewed because you could just have an entire tournament where everyone is Jace, and it's a little different from real life because of that. But for the most part, it runs the same way. Lots of fun and nonsense to be had there. And once the release events go live, the set is out in the wild. Go forth and have fun. So again, that's on the 24th. It's much sooner after the new set comes out than it was several years ago. They've gotten pretty good at this. And that's pretty much it for Magic Online.
Yeah, the delay used to be like more than a month, wasn't it?
I didn't play as far back as a lot of people did, but when I got into it, it was something in the neighborhood of 3 to 4 weeks after launch. And it just became this thing where when they would do the online pre-release, you're like, I've been playing with this for a month. I don't care. And the fact that the online pre-release also cost way more money than it should have, because they would charge you like a full 30 tickets or something, like a ridiculously high amount of tickets by comparison to the fact that you could draft using your own packs for 2 tickets. So it was just really expensive for cards that immediately go down in value. So they seem to have done a better job of balancing this out over time. And obviously getting it sooner is also helpful for the people that are going off to events and want to get in that grind time before they get there. So
sure.
Pretty great. And that's it for Magic Online.
Yay, Magic Online.
Magical internet mode. It is getting better. That is the motto. I'm pretty sure they have a sign up there that is like X days since worse, and they're trying really hard to keep ticking it up.
Oh. All right then.
So
are we
else?
Done?
Oh, I think we're done.
That sounds awesome. So how about some, you know, all the stuff we do at the end?
Closing stuff. All right. So yeah, I'll start that then since Clues isn't here for me to put on the spot. You can follow me on Twitter at SqueakyGoblinNabob. There's no I in Goblin. And if you want to see what I write about when I have more than about 120 characters in the hashtag, I actually put together an article for themanipool.com, which you can go and read. It goes into card evaluation, specifically in the context of Kythian, the new Gideon. And, you know, there's a lot of fun pictures in it. There's also a great picture of Kythian on a Savannah Lion's about to maul me. So at the very least, go look at that. But it's actually, I've got good feedback on the article. I don't write them very often, but it was one that I just sat down and like, you know, I'm going to write something. And then I actually did it, sent it to Chewy, and then he put all the pictures on it. Now it exists. So you can go read it if you want to.
I recommend it. It's good. And it's, how is it you put it? It's another tool.
Yeah. It's specifically about ways to take card evaluation a little bit further than people normally do. Very briefly, most people, when they look at a card, they're like, it's good or it's not. And there's more to it than that. And it goes into the other things you should be considering beyond just, does this card look really good in a vacuum? And if you can build these skills at card evaluation, then you'll do better faster in most formats. And it also just all around helps you when it comes to, do I want to buy this card? Do I want to wait on this card? Is this card actually going to be good? Will I be disappointed? A little bit better with that. So.
Yeah, and it actually relates to Sam Stoddard's article on reprints. Tangentially, because he actually mentioned reprints that should have been amazing, that were amazing originally and should have been amazing when they reprinted Nantuko Shade and Call of the Herd. Both of them were format defining in their first run in Standard. And then when they came back again, they did absolutely nothing tournament wise. So, and it's because the environment wasn't there. And on the Mana Pool, when we talked about this article, we talked about like Phyrexian Obliterator, which on raw power level in a vacuum is unreal.
Yeah.
But the format did not support it at all. And
it did not support black, 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 black.
Yeah. And it never did anything in the tournament scene because of it. So being able to look at more than just the card itself in a vacuum is extremely important. So yeah, go read Bill's article.
Yay.
And hurry up.
And that's it for my news.
Well, how about you then, the Trevor? Not a Trevor, the Trevor.
The Trevor? Well, let's see. The weekend calendar updates, like I said, at the beginning of the week on the blog, which will be in the show notes, and I do the podcast sometime on Friday, so that way it's up in time for you to figure out what's going on the weekend. But tell me about your events. Like, I really want to know about charity events that are going on. Like, if you're running something to help a player with medical bills, or you're running a memorial fund for someone. Like, those are the things I want to highlight with the calendar, and I don't really get a whole lot of them. Like, I kind of have to find them from friends. So, tweet at the calendar or at me. I'm at DARKR3X, and the calendar is, it's in the show notes, because it's a stupid name that I wish I could change.
I mean, you can just get a new one somehow. It's weird. I don't know how Twitter works, because there are people that I follow, like I followed a long time ago, who had this Twitter name. And then later I found out that I still follow them, and they have a completely different Twitter handle, like the actual handle, the at whatever, not the display name. And I don't know how you do that. So how do you do that?
You can change it on the settings tab. Because originally I changed it from Magic Calendar to Community.
No, not the display name.
He means the actual like login name.
Yeah, the actual
people at
whatever.
Yeah, I changed it from what it was originally, because it was originally at Regional Web, which was a dumb name.
It just let you do that? I didn't know that. Huh.
Really? I had no idea. When did that happen? Because back in the day, when you wanted to get a new Twitter handle, you had to make a new Twitter handle and then like tell everyone on your original one, go follow me here, I'm abandoning ship.
Yeah, migrating
just
rough.
Change it in username, like on the account tab.
I will be damned. I'm going to go look that up now because I did not know that. I don't want to change mine, but still.
Yeah, because the second if you move off Manipool, someone else will take it.
Yeah, I'm admittedly worried that if they ever give me that one extra character I need to properly spell Goblin, I'm going to lose my whole identity.
Username, the Manipool. I will be damned. It's right there, and you can change it. Huh.
Sorcery.
But I don't see my display name here. That's weird.
That is. Oh, because your display name gets changed on your profile page now.
Oh, okay.
So if you go to your actual, if you go to your actual profile and hit edit profile, it'll, you can change it there.
Oh my god, I'm learning how to Twitter.
Aw.
Okay, thank you. I did not know any of this.
It's okay. I have been trying to get a social media position at some company for a while now. So.
Word. But yes, all that will be in the show notes somewhere. I can't remember what's already in the show notes. Let me go look at that real quick, too. So every week in the Monday Night Hurry Up MTG Cast, every week in the Monday Night Magic show notes, you can find a link to check out the MTG community calendar on Facebook and Twitter. Yeah, I don't have your actual blog in there. I'll have to update that.
It's on the thing.
No, I meant in the stuff I copy-paste every week, I've got to update that.
Okay.
Yeah. But the Facebook and Twitter are in the show notes every week. So for the purpose of you guys being able to contact Trevor to update the calendar with any stuff like that. So by all means, check that out all the time. Not just because he's here now. Go back in time and tell him about some stuff.
Gotta go fast.
gotta go fast enough that you turn time backwards.
No, yeah. You just have to go backwards. You're not Superman. That'd be silly.
So is it my turn now?
Yes. Unless you want to shout out Clues, who's not here.
Clues is not here, so that's all Clues gets.
That's right.
What?
I mean, in fairness, I did check out the Kickstarter that Clues wants to talk about, and it is kind of cool looking, two-player deck builder.
He mentioned that, I think, last week, didn't he?
I think so.
Yeah, he did. That's why I deleted it.
Oh,
so,
okay.
I am going to mention a Kickstarter now that is created by Andrew Wilson, who... He's a copy editor over at Gathering Magic, or at least he used to be. I think he still is. And he used to be a Magic podcaster. He did – I can't remember the name of it because I'm actually a terrible person, but it was Magic Fiction. He would write a story, and then he would narrate it for the podcast every week or every 2 weeks, however often he did it. And that was pretty cool. But he is now a game designer, it would seem, because he's got – a Kickstarter up for a single-player expandable game of cards, dice, and adventure called Quest, Awakening of Melior. And it's also available on Tabletop Simulator, in case anyone has that to check out. But they're trying to reach the $6,500 goal. They're at $2,811 right now, with 27 days to go, so pretty sure it'll be there. But I read over this, I watched the video, I read the whole thing. And I was like, this actually sounds awesome. And so my broke ass actually backed it.
Whoa.
Right? So that I can give no greater, what's the word I'm looking for? No greater endorsement. There we go. Than the fact that I actually put some money into it and I am sort of broke. So yeah, go check it out. The link will be in the show notes. It's, it really does look like a lot of fun. And I wish I had picked up Tabletop Simulator when it was on sale on Steam, but then not really, because the only thing I'd use it for is nothing I can think of, actually, so that's why I didn't buy it. But yes, go check that out. It looks really cool. It looks fun and entertaining and not Magic again. You know, I don't think it's going to be collectible. Yay. So with that, you can follow me on Twitter at the Manipool. You can send me an email to Chewie, that's C-H-E-W-I-E, at mtgcast.com. And you can check out my Patreon if you want to throw some support my way for all the podcasting and videos and all of that that I do. Someone called me, like someone that wasn't me or one of you guys recently called me. Well, I don't remember word for word, but it was essentially the wizened old sage of Magic podcasting. I was like, huh, I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, I appreciate it because that's pretty much what I am at this point. If I have given advice to so many of the new podcasts and whatnot that pop up, And we'll do that for anybody if you just ask. You know, hey, you have any? Yeah, I have some. I'll help if I can. So by all means, any of you that have any questions, come to me. That's what I'm here for. But it made me happy that someone that wasn't me referred to me as that. It made me kind of giddy. But giddy? Did I say giddy? Oh, my God.
Quick, turn it into Gideon. There's still time.
Made me into Kytheon. Oh, damn it.
Flip it.
No, transform it.
Attack with friends.
Yes. Anyway, we're done now. So thank you very much, Trevor, for pitch hitting for the clues, since he is stranded in the nowhere.
Yeah, that's my problem.
And the wastelands of other Virginia.
I actually just put something in the show notes, so I feel like I contributed, because I was reading Twitter while listening to you, and MJ posted this sweet, sweet fan art of Jessica.
Yeah, I saw that. It was pretty awesome.
Also, apparently Gaia's Revenge is in Magic Origins.
As a rare.
Not sure how I feel about that.
It's big.
Fair.
Oh, we didn't talk about the card that we were all, like, super giddy about.
Was there a card that I was super giddy about?
The one that's pretty much going to kill Esper Dragons. Chapin and Flores had a preview this morning, which I'm calling Turbo Murder, and it's actually called Infinite.
I'm pretty sure there's more to that name.
Yes. Infinite Obliteration is the name of the card. And you name a creature card, and you get to search your opponent's hand, library, and graveyard for all copies of that creature.
And exile them.
And exile them, yes. And it costs as much as murder does.
I think they're overselling it, but I do acknowledge that it's...
Really? Hard. Mike Flores overselling something?
I know, it's his thing. It just means that they run not for Ojutai. They have a second creature that they can use to win. They diversify slightly, but...
This is notable that it doesn't have to have a target.
Yes.
Well, you search target opponent, but it doesn't...
Hey, you, over there.
You don't have to have a copy in a graveyard or in play or anything like that. So that's interesting.
The biggest thing they seem to be interested in was when you get to Thoughtseize them turn one and then do this turn three and take effectively like two to three cards out of their hand.
Well, two to three of your cards for two to three of theirs, but yeah. The thing that I like about it is the fact that now that, you know, Scry is a thing, it's sort of fun to be like, oh, they wanted to keep that. Well, now I'm also going to get to shuffle your library. Just like as that added little rub in as you slowly destroy their fragile deck ecosystem. But it does a lot of things. It's nice. It's still a 3-mana sorcery in a world where you can use 3 mana to kill an existing threat on the board. But it'll be good. It'll see some play. Most of my saying that I could see Esper Dragons running into trouble comes from the fact that there are a lot of just really good cards. And I could see Esper Dragons not so much being destroyed as they start running some non-dragons as well. Because there's just some good spells running around now.
Yeah, I know that for you guys seeing Standard every week in and week out, that it starts to feel the same. But the shift between Standard coming up to Dragons and then Standard after Dragons was such a radical departure.
It was, yeah.
That I'm really looking forward to seeing what a new set, which will be another radical departure, is going to do. Like, normally I'm super excited about rotation because cards that have been kind of squished down get an opportunity. But I feel like with what's coming out in Origins, that just going to be an explosion of decks.
I'm hoping so. I mean, the card that was most interesting to me in terms of, like, crazy nonsense is Day's Undoing, but we'll see what that does later. That is another way to completely mess with their plan. Hooray. Power 9 cards reprinted. What could happen?
We already banned one of them.
Non-standard.
Anyway, yeah, we're done now. Now we're just meandering. So,
correct.
Again, thank you, Trevor, for joining us.
Yeah, man.
Buddy. Did you ever tell Renee to slap you?
I will let her know we're done.
Now you don't have to, so it's fine. don't get slapped if you don't have to.
It is your choice.
It is up to you, sir. And, so this has been episode 469 of Monday Night Magic here on the MTG Cast Network. Oh, I forgot the last bit because we all got sidetracked. If you want to support MTG Cast, then you can, because all of the ridiculous number of shows that they host is not free. It's free for you. It's not free to make exist. You can go check out the support MTG Cast button on mtgcast.com. Sign up for a small monthly charge, every little bit of that will help, and it'll get the network into the green, which is nothing but good for anybody involved. So, yay. Okay, now we're done. So, episode 469 of Monday Night Magic here on the MTGcast Network. Thank you all very much for listening, and go play some Magic.